Welcome to the Champions Rugby Show, and the Heineken Champions Cup is finally back.
Leinster relentlessly march on low with the offload to Kearney.
Billy Vunipola driving for the line, scoring.
Lopez, it must be for Nangalebu.
A chip over the top, looking for Jenny Thomas. Owls needs to work. Oh, I think Thomas might have done that.
And here go Toulouse. If they can get the fourth try, it's a fifth try, and they do. And again, it's McCloskey. Oh, what a finish.
And Hutchison's away, scrambling to the line.
Is it through? He's going to gather this himself. It's Hawk! Stuart Hawk has conjured up two tries for the Chiefs.
Welcome to the show. I'm James Burridge. And after a 244-day absence, the quarterfinals of this season's Heineken Champions Cup take place this weekend. Leinster Saracens, Clermont Auvergne against Racing 92, Toulouse against Ulster, and Exeter taking on Northampton. So without any further ado, let's introduce my two guests today to look ahead to those four matches. We've got the former Clermont Auvergne and Gloucester scrum half, one of the highest point scorers in rugby union history, Greg Laidlaw, joins us. Greg, how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm very well, thanks.
Fantastic to have you with us. We're also joined by a man whose voice is synonymous with huge European rugby moments. It's RTE Radio's rugby commentator, Michael Corcoran. Michael, great to have you back on.
James, thanks indeed, and thanks for inviting me. It's a pleasure to talk here, as always.
Now, fellas, before we get stuck into the quarters, we've obviously been releasing this podcast to celebrate 25 years of the Heineken Champions Cup. I just wanted to get your favourite moments, first of all. Greg, as a player, you've obviously played for several clubs. I think I was there that day that you helped beat Toulouse up at Murrayfield. What was your standout moment from your Heineken Champions Cup career?
It was a few years ago, that Toulouse game now, but I think it's probably certainly my best memory of the championship and probably the semi-final as well, although we went down to our good Ulster team at the Aviva Stadium. It was, I think, as an Edinburgh team, we played tremendously well, and it was just such a brilliant thing. And certainly going back slightly to that Toulouse game as well, it was a fantastic effort by all the boys involved, and yeah, that was definitely my best memory of the Heineken Champions Cup.
Michael, you've been commentating on some cracking matches down the years. Which ones stand out for you?
I tell you what, there's quite a few, to be fair about it. I'd find it very hard to narrow it down to one. I felt like a music DJ last night trying to make out my top 10 of all time, and then trying to narrow it down again. I mean, there are so many. I mean, a lot of them associated probably around finals. The match actually stands out for me is it wasn't a final. It was all the way back in the early part of the 2000s, and it's involved an old club of Greg's there, Gloucester. It was Munster Gloucester, where Munster had to win by four tries and 27 points or more. And they did, and it was dubbed the miracle match afterwards. And certainly, you know, people around Munster will talk about beating the All Blacks in 1978. Well, the miracle match against Gloucester was a really special occasion, and I was fortunate to be there on the day. And as always, this competition is unique for atmosphere in regardless of where you play it, and it brings you to some memorable places. And Thomond Park that day was absolutely superb.
Absolutely spot on there, Michael. Completely agree. We spoke to Ronan O'Gara a couple of weeks ago about that very match. And yeah, there have been some spine-tingling moments, and agree with you about Bilbao too. What a moment that was for the competition. Let's get into our quarterfinals then. We have to start the podcast with what promises to be a monumental clash between the number one ranked Leinster Rugby and holders Saracens. It's the first of our quarterfinals. It kicks off Saturday, 3 p.m. local time. Let's just remind you of what happened when these two sides met in last year's Heineken Champions Cup final.
With smoke hanging above the pitch, Johnny Sexton has us underway. Conan controls, then drives for the line himself. He's held up by two Saracens defenders, but maybe not Sean O'Brien. Farrell! Dennis is there! He is there! Farrell pops it up! And Maitland scores! All heart, all character from a team who are on the ropes. Saracens with the opportunity to go in level at half-time. McGrath on his toes, eyes wide open. Billy Vunipola driving for the line, scoring. Sexton. He'll carry on playing until the referee tells him to stop. Vincent Cock tries to find touch, does. There will Robinho, fifth Eurostar stitched into Leinster's jersey this season. It'll happen one day, but not today. Instead, it's a third win for Saracens. Saracens European champions.
Great drama, great memories from that final at St James's Park. Michael, Stuart Lancaster has said Leinster in their kind of last dance moment, if you like. He knows that it's going to be the end of one dynasty at Leinster, certain players moving on. And this is a key moment for them. They've obviously just won the Pro 14 final. That one's in the bank. What about Europe, though?
Yeah, that's the big one for them, isn't it? And it's kind of ironic we're having a conversation now, James, about that game, because I think one of the last occasions that I spoke to you on this podcast was at St. James's Park in Newcastle, and that was the day before the final last year. But there's a huge sense of anticipation. Certainly, I mean, Leinster have gone completely undefeated in the Pro 14 competition. They have literally demolished anybody in front of them. It doesn't matter who's on the starting team. There's massive competition for places. You know, the last game, ironically, the last was against Saracens in the final last year, and they've now gone 25 games in a row in both Europe and indeed in the Pro 14 without losing a game, beating Ulster quite comfortably at the weekend in the Aviva Stadium. And they're in really, really good form. I like the fact he says he calls it the last dance. If it's a last dance, I'll tell you, it's lasting a long time, to be fair about it.
Yes. Greg, what about your perspective? I mean, as a player, when you play against Leinster, how on earth do you try and plot their downfall to start with?
Well, I think, you know, sort of Corky's touched on there that, you know, being undefeated for so long shows the real strength and what they've kind of developed over at Leinster. And I think, you know, watching the Pro 14 final there just at the weekend, I think you have to have real discipline against Leinster. That'd be my first starting point, because as soon as they enter the opposition 22, more often than not, they come away with points. And, you know, on the flip side of that, Ulster just couldn't score any points from that final at the weekend. So you've got to have real discipline, both sides of the ball, I guess, because, as I said, as soon as Leinster enter that 22, they're scoring points. And, you know, on the flip side again, you have to take your opportunities. And there's probably a couple of times at the weekend I felt Ulster should have kicked some points towards the post, and they chose not to do that. And Leinster's defence has been unbelievable. I think everybody talks about Leinster, you know, their attacking game and scoring points, but their defence was brilliant again at the weekend. And you can just see they've developed a real sort of fight, and everybody's pulling towards the same goals, essentially. So I think, you know, my starting point, if I was a coach, you've got to have real good discipline going into a game against Leinster, you know, alongside a lot of other things as well.
Michael, how different is this Leinster team to the one that lost to Sarries in the final a year ago?
It's completely, actually, James, to be fair. The personnel may very well be pretty similar in terms of more or less the same. They're far more ruthless now than they were. They're far more disciplined. Their defence is absolutely superb. And, I mean, I've seen teams go toe-to-toe with them, and you can almost see teams mentally switching off coming towards halftime, thinking, gee, I tell you, we've done okay. And all of a sudden they concede a try, which is converted, and that's another 7 points. Or you see teams not fully switched on at the start of the second half in a game against them, and they can absolutely demolish it in a 10-minute period, and that's what happened to Ulster at the weekend. I mean, it was 10-5 at halftime, close enough game, and all of a sudden 7 minutes into the second half, it's 20 points to 5. It didn't matter that Ulster had six, you know, internationals on the bench. They're not much good to you when you're chasing Leinster like that. And it's as Greg said there, he was writing down the word, he was talking about opportunities. I was actually at the same time writing down the word chances. You've got to take your chances when you play them, but they're just absolutely ruthless. It's like as if they've learned from last year. There were a lot of people's favourites. I picked them myself for to beat Saracens in the final last year. They didn't. They've learned from that, and they have just blown away everything that's come at them. I mean, they've won matches playing well, but they've won ugly matches as well. And you know, they do make it difficult for teams. And I think it's going to be a great occasion. It's just such a shame that we don't have a crowd there. That's the other side of it.
Well, that's going to be a key aspect, isn't it? And I know that EPCR, they're eager to have fans back in the stadium outside of France, as and when it's possible and safe to do so, of course.
Yeah.
How much of a factor, Greg, do you think that might be, the fact that the Aviva is going to be quiet, or relatively, apart from the fake noise and the whoops and the whistles from the teammates on the bench? What kind of a factor do you think that'll be?
Yeah, I think it's essentially the same for both teams, but there's no denying it's certainly different, and it makes for a real strange environment, a strange atmosphere. And I think sometimes you obviously, when you're playing in these big games, it's just part of it, and it becomes, it's awesome. It's certainly if you're that home team and you've got a few more fans in there as Leinster normally would, because they're so well supported. So I think once the game kicks off, it does change a little bit, and some of that stuff it does get forgotten, but it just adds to the atmosphere, doesn't it? It adds to the occasion, and I think a game of this magnitude, it deserves a crowd. But obviously, sadly, we've got to do things properly at the moment. So hopefully, when things are safe and well, we'll get people back in there. But it's for a quarter final, this is going to be the best one for a number of years, and for a number of different reasons. Obviously, that we've touched on there. With I think the last time Leinster were beat, it was obviously Saris in the final. I think Saris obviously having their own problems with going down, and now Owen Farrell's banned as well. It's
Well, I wanted to talk to you about the Farrell factor, and come on to Saris. I mean, how big a blow is that, Greg?
I think it's a big blow because Owen Farrell's an excellent rugby player. He's been all that's good about Saracens now for a number of years. So there's no getting away from it. Any team in the world would probably miss a player of his stature. And but I think now Saris, I think the way their culture is, they might try and they'll probably try and use that to their advantage and come together. But he's a quality rugby player, so anybody's going to miss him. And probably similar to Leinster in many facts, Saris have developed an excellent squad over the years, so they're going to need that squad this weekend.
Quite interesting to hear what Alex Sanderson, one of their assistant coaches, saying after their victory against Exeter in the Premiership, that they've got their own plan to try and squeeze Leinster. And just to finish with on this, Michael, one of them might be the line out, because that's where Leinster did come unstuck. And maybe if Ulster had taken their chances, they could have really torn into that Leinster line out in that final.
Yeah, I agree with you. And it wasn't just in that final. I mean, they've had difficulties since rugby's restarted in this part of the world with their line out. And certainly if I was on the coaching setup in Saracens, that's an area that I would target them, really, to be fair about it. They can't be as loose or as poor as they were, certainly in the final, or indeed in the matches leading up to the final also. So it's incredible, actually, to be fair, to think that, an up-and-coming hooker in Ronan Kelleher, and they're having difficulty finding the tallest man that I know in international rugby. It's 6'11", Devon Toner, and they can't get to him in the line out, regardless of what they try to do. And certainly if their line out is loose, that gives Saracens an in into the match, if you understand what I mean. And certainly, just even on the just to go back to the Owen Farrell thing, I mean, they've known obviously since the incident happened that he's not going to be involved. And I just think that solidifies their mindset completely. They will like to go in with sort of even more chips on their shoulder in terms of them being completely the underdogs. And they will see it as a chance for them to smash Leinster apart. And that's what they'll be trying to do, I think.
Yeah, it'd be fascinating to see how this one plays out. A lot of people have been talking about Alex Good probably coming in and filling that void for Farrell. Don't forget, he was named European Player of the Year last year. And he had an absolute stormer in the final a year ago. So anyone who thinks that Alex Good's a weak link, I think, needs to re-examine that one. And don't forget, go to the EPCR website, because we're going to ask you to vote for the European Player of the Year soon. You can pick your favourite from the 15 nominees, and you could have a chance to win a top prize. You two, just on this one, a quick prediction. Greg, how's this one going to go?
It's a tight one to call. You're looking at this game, I think if anybody can beat Leinster, it's probably Saris. I'm at the moment potentially Exeter, but I think I'll just go Leinster, but it's going to be a tight one.
Yeah, I mean, this is the end all and be all for Saracens, isn't it? Before they start an exciting new journey for them. And I mean that they will certainly like to try and upset the form book and claim this title for the fourth time. But Leinster at home don't cough up too many matches. They've already had four games in a quiet stadium at the Aviva Stadium, so I think it's going to be a rip-roaring contest. But I think just the Owen Farrell thing is a huge, huge loss for Saracens. I know they'll cope without him to a degree, but they won't be the same team. I think Leinster will win this one.
Right, following that, of course, we have Clermont Auvergne against Racing, Saturday, 6:30, kick-off at the Stade Marcel Michelin. And Greg, your old team, and you can tell us a bit about their mindset going into this, because, of course, the last time they got to this stage against Racing, they lost at home. You remember it, of course. But tell me the mindset of Clermont.
It's interesting you mentioned Stade Marcel Michelin, because I think it means so much to the players, to Clermont, to the town. As soon as you sort of rock up there on game day, you're expected to win, and you can sort of feel the aura of the city building, and the excitement, the atmosphere. So firstly, it's an awesome place to play rugby in. And Clermont will probably have that game back in their mind. I think that was 2017, the first season I arrived in Clermont, and Racing came down and managed. We were winning the game at one point, and we kind of just crumbled. So I think Clermont will try and use that last time Racing came down in the Champions Cup to jog their memory and make sure they don't slip up again. And I think out of the four quarters, I think it will probably be, in terms of the speed of the game, it will probably be the slowest out of the four, just because of the way the top 14s normally played. It'll be a bit more attritional, going from scrums and lineouts. But I think it'll certainly be exciting, and I'm guessing there'll be some fans allowed in the stadium. Clermont had 10,000 there last week against Toulouse, so I think that's going to be the same coming into this one. So it's a great place to play rugby, and obviously Racing are a great team as well. It'll be another cracker.
Yeah, the ambience there is just unreal, isn't it? I just wondered how much Europe does play on Clermont's minds, and Racing's, I suppose, for that, because these are two sides, bridesmaids, if you like. They've always got very, very close. They've been in finals, but they've never got over the line. How badly do Clermont want this, Greg?
Yeah, I could tell when I was at the club, this is the one they want. And as you say, they've always kind of been the bridesmaid, and they've always maybe had a little bit of history in finals of struggling to cope. And sadly, we lost the top 14 final. It would have been last season now when I was there. And it was interesting going into the final. I just felt maybe something slightly different within the team. It was strange to try and kind of put my finger on it. But certainly in terms of the Champions Cup, this is the one Clermont want. And I think they'll definitely be pumped up for this game at the weekend. They want to do well in this competition. Getting into some specifics, I think it'll be interesting. Sebastian Bezzi coming in from Toulouse, whether they're going to start him, whether they're going to start Morgan. Obviously, he's a legend of the club and been there for a long time. So potentially there's a slight change there that, who knows, what that will do.
And what I've found interesting about European rugby this year is the number nine, the scrum halves, have really come to the fore, haven't you? You look at Dupont at Toulouse, Teddy Iribarren at Racing as well. I know a lot of talk about Finn Russell at the moment, but Iribarren's been pulling off some ridiculous skills. The battle between the two nine and tens is going to be absolutely fascinating, isn't it?
Yeah, it's gonna be a good one. I think somebody like Iribarren, he's a lot of the time he's not really the fancied scrum half, as you'd like. But he's a wonderful rugby player, isn't he? He's just so laid back, and it's like he's just playing on a Sunday afternoon. And I think that's probably why he compliments somebody like Finn, because they're probably on the same wavelength, and they just go out there and play rugby and play what they see. So real, real dangerous players to cause Clermont a lot of problems. And then on the flip side of that, if you look to Clermont, as I mentioned before, is whether they go Sebastian Bezzi with Cammy, Cammy Lopez, or whether they go Morgan with Cammy. It's going to be a big call, and that'll probably change the dynamics of how Clermont play a little bit, because Sebastian Bezzi is probably a slightly different player to the way Morgan plays the game.
I bet you're missing it, aren't you, Greg? I mean, you were part of a team which kind of got them to this stage. And I know you've got an exciting future in Japan to look forward to, but I imagine you'll be missing this one.
Oh, yeah. It's a bit of a funny one, this one, because obviously I played through the group stages with Clermont, and then obviously European Rugby want to get this season finished, which is rightly so, and the competition deserves that. But, I'd like nothing more than to be involved at Stade Marcel Michelin come the weekend. It would have been awesome, but sadly not to be for myself. But, I've got new horizons coming up, but certainly I'll be tuning in to watch this one.
And a new exciting chapter for you in Japan. Tell us what you're up to.
Yeah, I've signed for NTT Communications Shining Arcs in the top league out there in Japan. I'm hoping to head out to Japan in early October, with restrictions dependent with COVID-19 and stuff like that. I've already had a couple of flights delayed or cancelled, sorry. But I'm sure that'll all pass, and then I'll get out there and start training with the boys sort of in mid-October, hopefully.
Well, best of luck from all of us. Michael, just a quick thought on Racing and what they have been producing in Europe, but also since rugby's restarted in France. They might not have Kirtley Beale. Depends how things go with his disciplinary. Obviously, he got sent off for a high hit in the game against Montpellier. But Mr. Russell's been doing what Mr. Russell does exceptionally well. And they just have the players to just turn it on at a moment's notice, don't they? They can be extremely dangerous.
Yeah, they're magical. They're a magical team. I mean, their stadium is certainly very futuristic in Paris. But, I mean, they've had a sensational start to the top 14. Some really good wins. And, I mean, the thing about it is, you know, people used to say over the years of this competition that the French clubs, it's a bit like the top 14, would are kind of interested in trying to win their home games. You never knew really what to expect when they played away matches. But that's changed. And the two clubs that have changed that for me are both playing each other in Stade Marcel Michelin, which I think is the most atmospheric place in European rugby. I love it. I was there in January of this year for the Clermont game against Ulster. And I saw Munster play Racing in Paris. I mean, Racing are so dangerous. Yes, Kirtley Beale may not be playing, but it's almost I had forgotten about him factor when you see that one fella steps out and then you see a long list of internationals from other places who can actually step in. So, Racing are a really brilliant side. Clermont, I just love them. I have incredible respect for them as a team. It's a fantastic city. And for different reasons to Greg, if I had to pick a second game I could go to at the weekend, it certainly would be this one.
Quick prediction, Michael?
I think home advantage. Clermont at home don't cough up too many games. As Greg said, I think that they're a team who've been almost there before, runners up on three occasions. And certainly I think I can see them taking another step forward this weekend.
Greg, what about you?
Yeah, I think I'll agree with Michael on that one. Again, I think it'll be a tight game because Racing, they've got some extremely dangerous players that can hurt you, whether that be Finn, you know, Irobaren, we've touched on. Jeremy Vakatawa at 13, real dangerous players. But I think at Stade Marcel Michelin, I think with the last time Racing, Pip and Clermont in the quarters a few years back, I think Clermont will get up for this one and just go over the line.
Yeah, Clermont against Racing kicks off 6:45 p.m. Saturday local time. Should be an absolute belter. Right, that's the two Saturday quarterfinals covered. Let's move on to Sunday and start with Toulouse against Ulster at the Stade. Ernest Vanot, that's a 1:30 kickoff local time. Michael, Ulster, what kind of mental state do you think they're in after the Pro 14 final defeat?
I would imagine not a good one in the early part of the week. I think it's the defeat by Leinster and the manner of the defeat by Leinster. I don't think Ulster have played well since rugby has restarted. They looked dead and buried against Edinburgh a couple of weeks ago. And came back and actually snatched that game from the jaws of defeat at the very end of it. I think the manner of the defeat against Leinster at the weekend will hurt them big time. They have a few issues to resolve in terms of team selection. Team selection is absolutely huge for Ulster this week. But they're going into, you know, one of the aristocrats, the home of one of the aristocrats of this competition. Nobody will fancy going to Stade Ernest Vallon, to be perfectly fair about it. Doesn't matter what size crowd there. It's going to be allowed in to watch that one. I mean, Toulouse are playing again with the sunshine on their backs and with a smile on their face. And when they do that, they can absolutely destroy you. And I think this is a very dangerous game from an Ulster point of view. And certainly they're going to have to be a lot better and far more clinical. And just got to think their way properly through the game this weekend in terms of when they get chances, they have to take them. And their decision-making has to be right on point, because if it isn't, you know, in terms of whether you take a kick at goal or go for the corner or that type of thing, you've got to play your own game, and they've got to try and do that on Sunday if they have any chance at all.
I think what's fascinating, you talk about selection there, Corky. Greg, when this competition was in the pool stages, John Cooney was ripping it up for Ulster at scrum half. And now Mathieson's kind of come in as well and made that selection for Dan McFarlane really tough.
He has.
And it just demonstrates the ebbs and flows of a year of rugby, doesn't it, really? What do you make of those two number nines and the differences they offer?
Yeah, I think, to be fair to Dan, I think, you know, looking at the semi-final, and I think Abby Matheson came on and made a massive difference in that final, to be honest. And I think that's probably what's good is Dan as a coach and as a person. He's not scared to make big calls and big decisions, and he just does the right thing for the team. So, you know, for whatever reason, you know, Cooney maybe seems to be just stalling a little bit, or or Matheson's playing well. You know, after lockdown, it's sometimes difficult to get back on the horse as it was. So, you know, I think as Michael touched on there, I think it's hugely important for Ulster this weekend is to get that selection right. I think both at 9 and 10 as well, do they bring in Madigan? Do they stick with Billy Burns? I think, you know, he's had a few big weeks and he maybe never had his best game on the weekend there, but there's other things around about that you know that can help him as well. So, and I think Ian Henderson coming back in to the team after his injury, I think that definitely helps Ulster. He's obviously a magnificent player and a big leader for them. But that's so important this weekend is who he picks at nine. But I think more importantly from that is how they react after the defeat at the weekend. It is really difficult to try and get up, but they need to try and park that as quick as they can and realise, you know, that they still have essentially a massive opportunity, albeit it's going to be an extremely tough game.
I saw Ian Henderson had to say after the final defeat, he was talking about how knockout rugby is a different beast. You've got to display composure, you've got to display discipline, and you've got to keep it going phase after phase after phase. And then you see what Toulouse have been doing since restart. And that, I don't know if anyone's seen it, that Dupont score a couple of weeks ago was just ludicrous. And they just have an all-court game, don't they, Toulouse? And I'm how can Ulster try and dismantle that?
I don't know. Quite honestly, that's my honest answer. Toulouse are just an absolutely sensational team, always have been. They lost their way for a while. It seemed as if they had couldn't find their way out of the forest or the maze of European rugby, but they've just simplified what they're trying to do. They can run you over, or, you know, they can turn on the sort of magic machine and score tries. One of the difficulties is to go there is I think you've got to try and take them out of the game if you can in the early stage, or keep them out of the game in the early stages. Like if they get an early score, it doesn't matter whether it's a penalty or a try or anything like that. If they get an early score, you know, their tails are up and they'll just play with confidence. And I've seen them put teams to the sword. But I've gone to Toulouse for a match against Connacht a couple of years back, and nobody gave Connacht a chance. And Pat Lam was in charge of Connacht at the time, and they were just belligerent in their attitude and kind of went, I don't care who you are. I don't care how many times you've won this competition. As far as I'm concerned, we're going to beat you today. And Connacht did turn around and beat them, and that was a great occasion. But, I mean, this Toulouse team is a different animal. It'll be interesting. This is the one game, actually, over the weekend that I'm kind of, it's going to be intriguing to see if the place isn't full. I don't know how many people they're going to allow into this match because that there's a huge telepathy between the team and the supporters. And certainly if Toulouse get ahead early on and there's a bit of a crowd there, it could be a long afternoon for Ulster.
Dupont, Greg, is key. Colbe has been sauntering his way through defences. They've just got a lot of standout players. They've got players who, when it comes to business end of competitions, can just take the level up two or three gears. Can you describe what it's like trying to play against players like that?
Yeah, I think it's one of the biggest tests in French rugby at the moment is going up against Toulouse. And briefly mentioned in the top 14 final earlier on, and it was Toulouse that beat us last season in the final. And we'd probably been the better team right throughout the season, or certainly matched them. But in the final, they were just a step ahead. And players like Colby, Dupont, Romain Antimac, I think if you just give them an inch, they'll take a mile. And I think, you know, come back to Michael's point, and I think it's a huge point coming back to the game coming up this weekend. If you let Toulouse into the game with a start, whether it be just let them get a nice attack early on, or, you know, even if they kick a penalty, it's so dangerous because it comes back to that French mentality. If they fancy it and they want to take you on in the way, Toulouse seem to play with this offloading game with your Duponts, Colbys that have been mentioned. They can kill any team. And I think if it goes slightly wrong for Toulouse, they've always got their power game to turn to with their massive forward pack. So they've almost got two ways to play, which is really important. So I think they're looking fairly strong. But so Ulster really need to start the game well. And again, because if you start well, if you get in their face, that mentality can go against them and they might not fancy it. But, you know, it's going to be a tough one for Ulster.
When you played them in that final, how different is training in France, Greg, when you're your type of training when you were at Clermont and the way you saw Toulouse play and train? What do you think makes French teams different from the ones you played in, whether it's Gloucester or in Edinburgh? How do French teams compare in that sense?
I think Certainly at Clermont, they're pretty well structured, or very well structured, in fact, with, you know, Frank Azam at the helm, and Frank worked a lot of years with Vern Cotter and people like that, and obviously Joe Schmidt as well. So Clermont had a big sort of influence of Kiwis, of, so they're really well structured. But having sort of known players that have went through Toulouse, whether it be Richie Gray or other players, I think you just seem to say it was a lot looser, and essentially they just let the players, you know, play with the sea a lot of the time, and, you know, a lot of their training's a bit more laid back. They just sort of play, you know, conditioning games, and that in itself, if they take them that mentality into games, and it's just so loose, but things are coming off, all their offloads are coming off, it's just so difficult to defend. And if you marry that up with some of the power players they have as well, it just becomes really difficult to stop.
Quick prediction then, you two. Michael, Toulouse, Ulster. Where's this one going?
I think this is a home win. It's a free throw of the dice for Ulster, to be fair about it. Not many people expecting them to come out in this one. Dan McFarlane is a canny coach, but I just think it's a huge monumental task. I don't see anything except a Toulouse victory here.
Yeah, I think again, I'll go with Michael on that one. I think after the defeat in the final there at the weekend, it's always tough to get up, and I think Toulouse are going to win this one.
Hi, I'm Lawrence Dallaglio, and you're listening to the Champions Rugby Show.
Right then, to the final quarter-final of the weekend. Sunday at 5:30, Exeter Chiefs against Northampton Saints at Sandy Park. Exeter, of course, going for their first Heineken Champions Cup title. Saints have been here and done it before, but they are a very different team to the one that won in 2000, of course, and they have got a whole host of problems. Let's speak with the former Northampton scrum half, Lee Dixon. Dicko, great to have you on the pod.
Thanks for having me. Looking forward to it.
So what is going wrong at Northampton? Let's start there, first of all, because they've been one of the stories, haven't they, really? They've kind of fallen off a cliff in the Premiership. And they've got a massive headache with Exeter now, haven't they?
I wouldn't think it was as drastic as what people are saying. You know, it's a very difficult period, this two games per week, real tests of the squad. You know, things are going a little bit wrong, but this game against Exeter is a one-off game. There's no tomorrow. If you turn up, you get a win, you go through. So, you know, they will be the massive underdogs. But for me, knowing at Northampton what they're like on one-off games, I've got fully 100% for them.
And Chris Boyd previously had always backed this game of width, of ambition, of continuity, and confidence has been their big problem. And you would have been in teams, Lee, when you would have been playing at, you know, real swagger, and then one moment you would have lost that altogether. How does a team get its swagger back?
That is a million-dollar question, that. It's just sticking together and believing in the processes. You know, everything I hear about Chris Boyd is, you know, he really puts emphasis on the boys to go out there and play, and you can see how they play. They're only probably a couple of percent off, and that couple of percent in the Premiership makes you lose. So, you know, an odd ball down here and there, like skill execution, playing against big teams, you know, it's hard. This period of time is very hard, and when you're down, you're down, and it is hard to get out of it. And the boys have just got to trust themselves. If they get a big win, things could completely turn around.
You talked about it being knockout rugby. Can you just tell me the mindset about how different players feel about that? Because you're right, I suppose it does free them up to an extent, doesn't it? They can just give this a lash and see what happens. But it's very different from week in, week out league rugby, isn't it, in that sense?
Yeah, you know, you get to where you are. They've got there because they're a good team. Yes, the Premiership now they can park. So you park that on a Monday and then you start looking forward to this knockout rugby. And knockout rugby, as I said, you know, if your skill execution and you have that one worldie of a game, you can beat anyone. Anyone can beat anyone. Saints, what they have is they have the art of surprise now. So no one's going to give them a chance. No one thinks they're going to win. Exeter away, top of the league, playing well. Saints not doing too good. So everyone already thinks Exeter are going through to the semi-final. So Saints can use that as a motivation. And they can go there and take everything off their backs and just go out there and play with freedom. And I think we will see that. And I think the big thing for Saints is that front eight is going to be hugely important this weekend.
Because we know how much Exeter can use that front eight to devastating effects. How can Northampton try and prevent this game turning into an arm wrestle, certainly in the tight five and the pack? Because Exeter, you know it, Lee, you've played against them. When they're in close range, they're pretty devastating.
It's discipline. If you give a penalty to Exeter, you know you're going to be inside your 22 and they're going to use that power game. So if you take away their penalties, they've got to get there, and they can get there. But Northampton, with the defence they have and the systems they use, can break that down. But discipline is going to be the huge thing. You know, them new rules of lifting the ball, it's 1 minute you can get one 1 minute you can't. But when Exeter get in your 22 or even on your 5 metre line, you've seen Cowan Dickey the last 3 or 4 weeks, they're now tapping and going. And they're literally working in them frees, and they'll do it for 20, 30 phases until they get over the line. And that's what they're good at.
What surprised many of us about Northampton, I suppose, is that they've become worse at playing the game they're best at. Can you figure out why?
It might just be a confident thing from the lads. They might, you know, being away, you know, doing things haven't just clicked since that COVID stuff's happened, and now they've come back, and they've got to find a way to relax a little bit more. You can see, you know, they're a bit tentative. They're making sometimes real bad decisions under the ball. You know, sometimes, yes, the running side of it all is great, but when you play against a team and you've not got much confidence, sometimes you've just got to kick the ball and chase and get a good chase line and maybe slow the game down a little bit and work a bit more on the easy stuff like the kick chase and things like that. Because the expansive game of rugby, everyone wants to play that, but teams work that out and then they can defend. And then if they catch you high, you know, you're in a lot of trouble.
And with the likes of Dan Bigger at 10 and Courtney Laws in the pack, they do have leaders who have done it and been there before, haven't they? I imagine that is going to be absolutely crucial for them.
They've got the squad to do it, 100%. You know, I back them 100% that they have the squad to go down to Exeter and beat Exeter. And then also, following on from that, to kick on for the last couple of games in the Premiership. You know, they don't turn into a bad team overnight or over a couple of weeks. Yes, the results aren't going their way at this moment in time, but they're still a great team. They've still got world-class players. They've got world-class youngsters coming through. And at the moment, they're getting an unbelievable amount of experience. So they're only going to learn from these situations. And as you said, Courtney, Dan Bigger, you know, Tom Wood at the moment's injured, but he will still be driving that culture and that leadership in that club. And I know he'll be a big part of this week of using his experiences in these type of games. And, you know, they've just got to go down there and enjoy themselves, throw the ball around, play in the right areas, and you never know what happens.
Just a final one, Lee. When you've played Exeter and all the times you've played them as a player, they love possession and they love being patient about it and they love wearing an opposition down. How difficult is that to play against, and what's the way to try and catch Exeter off guard?
Yeah, you've got to play them a little bit at their own game, really. You've got to try and keep hold of the ball as long as possible. Every time I've played against them, we've started really well. We've started well, we've got on the scoreboard, and then we've made them play a wide game. And they can play a wide game, but then, you know, it's such a difficult game to play wide all the time. If you get high and, you know, people like Rory Hutchinson can get in people's eye lines, you get interceptions. If you start fast against them and you front up, it's going to be one hell of a game. If you don't, it's going to be a long, old evening.
What's your prediction?
My honest prediction, and this is not just because I'm a Saints fan, I think Saints will beat them. I think they will go down with a mindset that no one in the rugby world gives an opportunity to win. And, you know, the belief that I know that they have in that squad and the belief they have in them coaches, they will go down in this one-on game their way. It'll be close. I think it will be close, but I think Saints will dog it out.
Dicko, great to have you on the pod. Optimistic as ever. Wonderful to have you on, Lee. Talk to you again soon. Thanks very much.
Okay. Thank you very much for having me.
So from one scrum half to another, from Lee Dixon to Greg Laidlaw. Greg, what chance do you give Northampton of pulling off a major shock this weekend?
Oh, I certainly have Exeter down as favourites to win the game. But Northampton have got a good team. They've got players that can hurt you, whether it's Naira Voro, Dan Bigger's in there. I think Courtney Laws is an excellent player. So they've certainly got a chance, and they're in the European quarter-final because they deserve to be there. So they've got good enough players to cause Exeter problems. But it was interesting, I was reading after the Northampton game, Chris Boyd, the head coach, he's almost questioning whether they need to have a look at changing the way they play slightly at the moment, because after rugby's restarted, they've probably not really got up and running into their wide game. So
He can't do that now, though, can he?
Well,
this is what I think is so fascinating this week. How on earth does Chris Boyd plan and prepare this week?
Yeah, well, that's the thing. It's probably especially going into playing against a team like Exeter who know their game plan inside out and they're just excellent at it. If he's not happy with how they're playing, essentially it's a roll of the dice this weekend, because they're playing away from home. They're probably not fancied anyway, and they probably need to pull some out of the hat a little bit in terms of the way they've been playing lately. I think they've lost 6 from 7, so they need to find something for this weekend. But as I mentioned there, they have got excellent rugby players throughout their team, so if they get it right, you know, who knows?
Michael, let's talk a bit about Exeter, who have just been devastating since they've returned. They've almost been using the Premiership as a testing ground, haven't they? If they get that maul going, you know, it will be ominous for Northampton, won't it?
Yeah, I certainly will. You know, Sandy Park is a tremendous place to experience rugby. Rob Baxter, I think, is a man who's just got Exeter DNA all over the place. They're a really, really good team, very coached team, well-drilled team. They've recruited really well. They play an excellent brand of rugby, but if they need to roll up their sleeves and out-muscle you, they're quite capable of doing that as well. I mean, they are where they are in the Premiership for a reason. And you know that they're just a classy side. Their form has been really, really good. I'm kind of surprised at where Northampton are on the table, but they obviously must be there for a reason. I don't see all of their matches, to be fair about it. But Exeter are a club I have huge respect for them and what they've done. And I think they're going to win this game. Northampton are kind of, as I say, in the middle of the table, surprisingly so from my point of view. They've really got quality, classy players, but just for some reason, they've great pedigree, but they're just not gelling together as a team for some reason. Maybe they will this weekend, but I'm expecting Exeter to win this one.
And we talked about how Leinster were the masters at possession and scoring every time they get into a 22. Mm. I'd say Exeter are running them pretty close to that, aren't they, Michael, in terms of their every time they're on point?
Yeah, I was sort of in my head trying to think back to which was the previous game that we said when they get to the 22, they can wall you over. But thank you for reminding me, James. Yes, you know, I mean, that they're that type of team. I can remember calling matches in Sandy Park and you see Exeter playing and they get a penalty and they kick it into touch inside the 22 and you go, ah, I know what's coming next. You know, and I mean, and that's what happens. They're superb in all aspects of what they do. And as I said, they're one of the form teams, not just in the Premiership, but certainly in Europe, I think, to be perfectly fair. Like they've learned over the years, they've had heartbreak over the years as well in terms of maybe not progressing as far as they wanted to. And that's why the recruitment has been really strong as well. And they've certainly learned. And that's why they are where they are this season.
I imagine both of you going for an Exeter victory. Do either of you give Northampton a chance?
They've got a chance, but I fancy Exeter.
Michael?
Yeah, they certainly have a chance. I mean, it's a two-horse race, so you have to respect the other team that are in it. I mean, Northampton, and that's probably the men, they've got to try and use that to their advantage. Nobody's given them a chance. Yes, they have a chance, but I'm expecting Exeter to win.
Right, that's your four quarterfinals assessed and analysed. Let's give you the dates and times. Saturday, the 19th of September for Leinster against Saracens at the Aviva Stadium. A 3 o'clock kickoff local time on BT Sport and BN Sports. Then our second quarterfinal is Clermont Auvergne against Racing 92, Stade Marcel Michelin. That kickoff time at 6:45 local on BN Sports and BT Sport. Then to Sunday, Toulouse Ulster. What a game that should be. Stade Ernest Vallon, a 1:30 kickoff local time on France 2, BN Sports, BT Sport, Channel 4 and Virgin Media. And then to finish things off, Exeter against Northampton Saints at Sandy Park at 5:30 kickoff local time on BT Sport and BN Sports. That's the Heineken Champions Cup wrapped up. The Challenge Cup quarterfinals also take place this weekend. All of these broadcast live on BT Sport as well. And the lineup: Friday evening, Bristol Bears against the Dragons at Ashton Gate. That's a 7:45 kickoff local time. Then Saturday, Bordeaux Bergues against Edinburgh at the Stade Chaban Delmas at 1:30. Toulon Scarlets at the Stade Félix Mayol, 21:15 kickoff. And then finally on Sunday, Leicester against Castres at Welford Road at 3 o'clock. Michael, your pick of the matches, who's standing out in the Challenge Cup for you?
To me, there's one game that stands out, actually. That's the Bordeaux Begley against Edinburgh match. I think Edinburgh were very unlucky to lose in the semi-final of the Pro 14 a couple of weeks back. I mean, Richard Corkle, Pro 14 coach of the year, and he's that for a reason, because he's respected by all of the other coaches. Really great players. Again, it's just like the Ulster thing. I'm kind of wondering how Edinburgh will have coped with having lost the semi-final, maybe even the manner of the semi-final, how they've used the time in between. Do they feel sorry for themselves, or do they use that sort of hurt and pain to drive themselves on? I'm hoping that's the case. But they're going to play a team in their home back garden in France. And again, all of these French teams, it's difficult to go there and win a match as an away team. You know, away quarterfinals in the Challenge Cup and obviously previously in the Champions Cup, away wins are really, really rare. I think this is the stand-up match for the weekend, to be fair, and that's the one that certainly has caught my eye.
Greg, what about you? Which stands out? Your old team, or is there another one which picks your eye?
No, I'd probably, for obvious reasons, that probably one sticks out for me. Obviously, I think maybe Toulon as well. Potentially, they seem to be getting their act together a little bit as well, but certainly this Edinburgh-Bordeaux game, it's going to be a big one, and from what I've been hearing back home in Scotland, is Edinburgh had a fairly scarce and damning sort of review of that semi-final defeat of Ulster, and it was pretty tough by what I'm hearing. So I think if anybody can get sort of Edinburgh up, and we obviously talked about Ulster trying to get up for their next game, I think Edinburgh, it's probably slightly easier for them in the fact that it's coming off the back of that defeat in the semi-final rather than the final. And I think somebody like Richard Cockerell seems to have the knack of pushing the right buttons, in essence, of getting the team up for it. So I think, you know, Edinburgh, they're going across here against a very strong Bordeaux team. So I think it makes for an excellent game.
Greg, I'd love to ask you about Finn Russell too, about playing alongside him, training with him, certainly during your Scotland days. He could have a huge impact on Racing's ability, not just to win in the quarters, but to win the whole thing. Can you tell me what it is like playing alongside Finn?
To be honest, it was awesome. And I think, I remember when Finn first came into the Scotland team, and we were probably struggling a little bit, you know, not playing the best. And then, you know, this young chap comes in, and I'd never really met Finn before, and yeah, it was just an absolute pleasure. And I think that's probably why I played my best rugby, to be honest, in a Scotland jersey, was alongside him, because, you know, everybody sees the funny side and everybody thinks he's not serious, but Finn's a winner as well, and he's a competitor, and that's what I liked about him, because he could relax, he could have fun, but he's a winner as well, and he wants to make whoever he's playing for a better team, and certainly he'd done that with Scotland, and he probably, you know, made me a better player as well. So I think we just had a great connection. I always remember the first game we were playing away in Canada, and it was Finn's first cap, and he like done this ridiculous like chip on our own 22, and, you know, we weren't too many points ahead at the time, and I sort of says to him, you know, we need to kind of be careful, and he kind of just said, I'll be fine, don't worry about it. So he's very much, he just plays what he sees. He's a sort of breath of fresh air, and but an incredible talent as well. And I think it just goes to show that he's really well respected at Racing, coming in and after somebody like Dan Carter was at the club. You don't go there and be a success unless you're an excellent rugby player. And I think if Racing are going to win this weekend or win the tournament, Finn will no doubt be a massive part of that.
He is such a wonder to watch. When you've played alongside him, how much of it is planned and how much of it is you going, oh my God, here we go, he's gone off on one. Right, let's just go with this. Because it, you know, he loves unstructured rugby, doesn't he?
He does, and that's, you have to just essentially let him loose at times, and that's probably where Finn and I were able to sort of develop a good relationship over the year, because every time, you know, any time during the game, you'd just be shouting on the ball, like, you know, give me it, and oh, I've seen this was on and that's on, and, you know, sometimes I'd never give him it because it was just, that was just, come on, Finn, that wasn't on, but other times it's just, you know, you just give him it because, you know, you could spark something out of nothing. I think it comes from probably training as well. Because you see him do things in training, and you just build up that sort of that respect and that trust in what he can do on the field over the years.
And of course, the Lions Tour is on everyone's kind of radar now. He could be an incredible kind of point of difference, couldn't he? He has the ability just to turn games on a sixpence.
He does.
This could be a huge year for him.
Yeah, it could be, and obviously, I hope it is, because, you know, certainly if I was in the Lions set-up, I'd be picking him, because, in my opinion, you're not going to go down to South Africa and win a test series against South Africa, playing the way South Africa play, and Finn's probably so different to the way South Africa play. You need players like that, and he can just cut defences open. He can see things quicker than a lot of other people can see it, and he just brings that point of difference that I think the Lions will need, because South Africa are one of the best defensive teams in the world. So, you know, hopefully for Finn's sake, for Scotland's sake as well, that Finn will get on that tour and do himself proud.
Michael, let's just reflect then on who you think the individuals will be standing out from this quarterfinal weekend. We've talked about Finn with Greg. Who else do you think could stand out this weekend?
I mean, if you look at the history of this competition has always been won by teams who've got really good outside halves. And I think that's going to be the difference between winning and losing this weekend and the teams that go on to win silverware. I mean, you've mentioned Finn Russell there. I mean, I think he's just a world-class player. In terms of this weekend, obviously Leinster with Johnny Sexton, he's another driven man. And some people wondered how he could become the captain, how he could carry the responsibility of being captain. and play the key role that he does as well, whether the two of them could mix. Well, if anything, he's relishing the role as captain, to be fair about it. And I'm not saying he's one to watch this weekend, but he's a man who has a key role to play for his team in terms of a big battle that they have at Aviva Stadium. I mean, the 10s to me are the ones who make a huge difference.
Fellas, it's been a great listen. It's been fabulous to have your company with us on the Heineken Champions Cup podcast. Thanks very much indeed. Just a final thought from both of you. Who is going to be lifting the trophy in a few weeks' time? Michael?
Leinster.
Took you a while.
No, I have to think about it. I mean, think about it in terms of the structure of the way the competition is, you know, who plays who in the semi-final and who may have home country advantage or you know, whatever's going to happen. There's a bit of unpredictability about the way this has gone. But I think, as I'd say in basketball terms, I think Leinster are certainly capable of going coast to coast unbeaten in two competitions to win it for the fifth time.
Greg?
Yeah, I think it's between three. I think it's between Leinster, Exeter and Toulouse, in my opinion. I think Leinster are slight favourites, but I don't know. I've got a feeling about either Toulouse or Exeter might just come good this season. I'm not sure.
Fellas, great to have you with us. Really appreciate it. Great chat as always. Look forward to watching the games this weekend. And yeah, enjoy the weekend. Thanks very much indeed for joining us.
Thanks, James.
Cheers, James.
Greg Laidlaw, Michael Corcoran there from RT Radio, and of course Greg Laidlaw heading off to Japan. Thanks very much indeed for listening to the show. We'll be back to review the quarterfinals and look ahead to the semis in the 25th anniversary season of the Heineken Champions Cup. Please subscribe to our Champions Rugby Show podcast using your favourite podcast provider. And if you've enjoyed it, please leave us a review. But for this week, from me, James Burridge, it's goodbye.